Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Continuing
nice.
With our... Nice, is right.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday we did a presentation about a book called The Continuum Concept.
Oh.
It was by Jean Liedloff, who was a remarkable guest, and she spoke to us about her work in the Amazon. Jean brings to us that in the Amazon, she noticed that there was no stress and everybody lived longer and so on and so forth, and she found the key element to be that the children were held by the mothers for as long as the children needed to be held by the mothers. So the mothers did not put the baby down. They never put the baby on the ground. They never let it walk around by itself. If they turned it over to someone else, they did that. But, you know, down in the Amazon, there are boa constrictors and alligators and things that will eat your baby. So they held on to the baby, much as we did before we evolved into computerized cribs. Sure there are computerized cribs.
Of course, there
don't
are.
Don't you think?
With monitors, so you can leave the baby alone, and you can keep an eye on the baby even if you're not in the same room. Because now, every American couple has been convinced that a baby has to have her own room and bed. And sharing the bed, family bed, has been strongly discouraged in America, so that it's almost a taboo to think of letting the baby sleep between the parents.
So we became curious about touch and about the rules of touching and so on and so forth. And we took a look, and we're not taking a position either way. We're not saying you should be touched more or you should be touched less. But the research does indicate that we've abandoned some stuff that may be of help to us. I mean, well, first I want to look at this from an evolutionary point of view, Roberta. When did we start getting the sense of touch? The sense of touch is called the mother of all senses.
Mm.
So at what point did we go from having something in our hands that would convey so much information to us?
Well, Armand, I believe that the reason why this particular sense is so important is because without it, we die. We can survive without seeing. We can survive without hearing. We can survive without being able to taste anything, but we cannot survive without touch. And when did it become so important?
Could you slow that down just a minute? Are there any people who lose their sense of touch? Sure, alexithymics very often do.
Well, but what I mean is that, for instance, if a baby is not touched, even a healthy baby has a 30% likelihood of dying before age one if the baby is not held and touched enough. Even for adults, the less people are touched, the shorter lives they seem to live. This is just what statistics are showing.
Touch. There's two kinds we're talking about. Being touched
and touching.
And touching.
And both are important.
Okay, touche. Touche. At the at the very beginning, I think, you know, that when we got up off our hands.
Well, first of all,
we used to walk on our hands.
Right, but let's say that hands at first were used to hold food. And
well, before that, they were used as feet.
Right.
I mean, horses
to
have
climb,
4 feet.
To climb on trees, I guess, on to branches.
Even to walk on the plains. The, mm-hmm. the animals before us that were our descendants walked on all fours.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're walking on your hands or when you're walking on something, it's going to become like a club. It's going to become have very few senses.
But then we figured out that by using our upper limbs as a utensil, as a tool for carrying food, rather than using it as a locomotion apparatus, I think that that's where we started to realize that hands could be used for a lot more than just carrying some food or a baby, because I'm sure that's also one of the first usages. And I think what happened was that with hands, we started to communicate non-verbally with one another in a way that we continue to do to this day. And in fact, we have developed more and more nonverbal communication through touch. And I think that that's why, the hands have become one of the most important body parts when it comes to communication.
And then with the hands come the homunculus.
I love that word. Homunculus.
Homunculus.
Homunculus. Homunculus.
Is that Italian?
That's Latin, yes. It means little man.
All right. Now this is, you have to imagine all of you, all of us, have a homunculus. And the homunculus is a map. It's kind of, well, I'm going to describe it as it's an over map on the brain. It sits on top of the cortex, or it's in the cortex, but it's like a little man laying there. If you looked at the brain from the top and you look straight down, you would see something with four extensions, like arms and feet, you know?
What happens is on the cortex, the top of the brain, there are locations that correspond to parts of the body. And the more receptors for touch are to be found in one specific body part, the bigger that brain area is. So, for instance, the hands of the homunculus are huge, and so is the face, but the ribs are very small. And that's because the hands have a lot of touch receptors and the ribs don't.
The homunculus, when we're saying it's in your brain, we say huge, we mean like it's an inch and a half.
We mean that it's big, and I'm sure you've seen it in some book in school. There's a representation of sensory distribution. And when it comes to touch, the homunculus has huge hands and feet and a little bit smaller feet, a huge face, and very small middle part of the body.
And so big genitals.
And big genitals, yes.
Right? So the genitalia, the hands, the feet, the face have the most sensation, and with that have the corresponding amount of nerve fibers that are sitting right up there on the top of your brain that receive this information. Therefore, you have, as we grew, as we became, as we got off our hind legs or got onto our hind legs and used our hands, the homunculus became more and more complicated, and it grew more and more, and therefore we have these tremendous sensors. Now, when we talk about touch sensors, we are talking about something that has the power to affect the entire body. Let me just do a little aside. Let's talk about horses.
Sure, let's talk about horses. There is this very nice lady. Her name is Linda Tellington, and she loves horses, and she was trying to come up with a way to calm down an irritated horse, an angry horse, a horse that's scared, a horse that's out of control. And so she came up with the Tellington touch, and it's Tellington. It sounds like I'm stuttering, but it's actually two T's in front of Ellington, and it's now a trademark. It's a way of making small circles on the skin, on the back of the horse and the hind part of the horse's back, circular round motion that detaches the skin from the muscle and causes the horse to relax completely. Now, she then applied this to other animals, pets, even lions and tigers and bears, and then humans. And what she has found is that this kind of touch is the best way to help someone calm down when they're angry, afraid, upset, out of control, anxious, and when they're not able to get a hold of themselves.
Let me try to let me try to describe it to you, the Tetellington touch.
Tetellington touch.
The Tetellington touch is kind of a kneading, like K-N-E-A-D-I-N-G. You actually roll the skin between your fingers ever so lightly, lifting it off the bone, lifting it away from the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And this very act, and just continuing to do it, completely relaxes mm-hmm. someone. Now, I know from dealing with cats and dogs that one of the ways I would automatically deal with a dog or a cat is I would do that with their flesh, with their fur.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I guess it comes instinctive to you because you're so in tune with your cats that you kind of let your hands figure out how to touch them in a way that relaxes them. She actually developed a whole science about this. And I think what happens is that by detaching the skin, you facilitate blood flow and you facilitate the cleaning up of toxins and things like that. But most of all, you increase endorphin production all over the nervous system, not just in the part that you're working on, but the whole entire nervous system is flooded with endorphins when you do that.
Hence, you see your animals purr.
Exactly.
You know?
And you could do this to a boa conscriptor. You could do this to any animal, to a bird. It's not limited. In fact, I did it to Rags. And it worked. Rags used to love this. This is the parrot that I used to babysit. Rags.
Oh, I'm so glad you described it as a parrot. For a minute, I was thinking about you doing it with old clothing.
And
Rags made your old clothing relax.
No. Rags was a parrot.
Was a parrot. Sure. Okay. So now what does this have to do with what we're talking about? Well, we're talking about the magic of touch. I suspect that when you comb an animal's hair with a brush, what you're really doing is lifting their skin
mm-hmm.
off the muscle and off the bone. You know what I mean? It's not just smoothing down. You're moving
right.
it around.
Right.
What this says is that touch has the power to activate a lot of different things in us. And somehow, we have seen touch as both a danger and it's an angel, too.
Sure. What we do know is that when people are not touched enough, they seem to get depressed and they seem to live shorter lives. But there is a way to touch someone that could be invasive, could be abusive, could be used to hurt, of course, as well as to heal.
And so therefore we get this conundrum of people being willing to or looking at touch, and now we have fathers who are afraid of touching their daughters. A recent article in the New York Times appeared, and it talked about daughters who are craving the touches of their father because of the, it's called Daddy's Forgotten Girl by Daphne Merkin. And in this article, she talked about how it was in New York Magazine, actually. Yes, it was. And it was, and she was talking about how they suffer from fatherly attention, specifically the contact.
Mm-hmm.
Has left the contact, the physical contact between father and daughter because of the taboos that have been put on it.
Yes.
You know, and the men have questions about themselves, and maybe they rightfully should. But what's happened to touch is it's become toxic as well as it's become healing. Let's talk a little more about it. It's one of the most essential elements of human development. It's a profound method of communication. It's a critical component of the health and growth of infants. And it's a powerful healing force. I was speaking to a physician the other day, Dr. Neil Schachter, you all know, and he was talking about the five different ways that physicians touch patients diagnostically. And I know he included palpating is one thing you do, which is when you push on something and you lean on it. Another one is you listen, you feel temperature. And mm-hmm. another one is you feel
The pulse,
and another one is you
tap,
you echo, you mm-hmm. try to echo by mm-hmm. tapping. Mm-hmm. And he talked about all these things that you do to diagnose a patient, but he did not include in a doctor's touch, in a therapist's touch, reassurance.
Right,
and comforting. Physicians taught comforting mm-hmm. and reassurance. Doctors, physicians are afraid to touch now.
Well, but I mean, rightly so, because they've been indoctrinated that they are not to touch a patient unless it's for a diagnostic reason, that it's not a good idea, A, because there is a belief that it's safer for the physician to keep emotionally detached from whatever is going on with the patient. And if the physician were to extend himself with an act of encouragement, that could be emotionally too involving. But also on the part of the patient, perhaps with all of the malpractice lawsuits going on, there's a fear that the patient might misconstrue the touch.
We're going to be talking about how people construe and misconstrue mm-hmm. touch, and mm-hmm. maybe they construe it accurately. I went to the dentist once about a year ago, and the dentist was doing some deep work on my mouth. And she was trying to say, well, does this feel sharp? She had just buffed a tooth or something. And she was feeling it with a gloved hand. I know this dentist for 20 years. I said to her, Rosemary, take off your glove.
Mm.
Feel the tooth and tell me if it's sharp. I can't tell if it's sharp or not. She said, take off my glove. And it was almost like I was inviting her to some terrible mm-hmm. thing, because they can't take off their gloves anymore. When they touch, they must touch with a glove. Physicians, imagine walking into a physician's office and feeling terrible and miserable. Imagine if he put his hand on your shoulder, if he knew you, if he knew it was appropriate, if he knew you weren't going to feel invaded, if you were an old friend, if he put his hand on you and said, oh, I'm so sorry you feel bad.
Could be magical.
It could be magical. Sure. Nurses know this.
Sure. Thank God that finally nurses are actually allowed to touch, through the work of Dolores Krieger, the originator and the teacher of therapeutic touch, which is now in a lot of hospitals. It's being used as a way of helping along whatever treatment a patient may be undergoing. Because it has been shown to be so effective.
Nature has its way of getting even, you know, of warning people. Bed sores are all the result of the
sure.
lack of touch.
Sure.
I mean, if somebody would even wash a patient appropriately
yeah.
or rightly or correctly,
right.
they would not be bed sores.
Absolutely.
Let's look at some of the prohibitions.
Mm-hmm.
One rule that has kind of come down, and you should understand, is that there's a rule that says don't touch the opposite gender. Now, this taboo is based on the belief or worldview that sexualizes all or most forms of touch.
Mm-hmm. How about don't touch the same gender friends? That's maybe even bigger, because if a man who's a friend of a woman hugs her in a very discreet way, well, that's kind of accepted. But if a man hugs another man, immediately people could look at that as an expression of homosexuality.
Well, you see, what's happened is the fathers have separated touch from their sons.
I know.
The sons are yearning for that hug.
Yes.
You know, and now you get that hug, you suddenly get a hug from a man.
Mm.
It does two things. It brings up a homophobic fear. I'm afraid I find this so attractive and desirable that maybe I may be gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one fear that men have. But underneath that is it triggers off your yearning need to have connected with your father.
And especially, as you're pointing out, this is a taboo that has happened between men, because thank God women don't have nearly as much of a taboo hugging and kissing each other. All over the world, you're much more likely to see a couple of women being affectionate in that way than a couple of men. How about don't touch yourself? That's a big one. I think every child in the modern era has heard that at least once. And it's kind of scary what I've read. Some of the... This, of course, it stems from religious and puritanical dictates that were imported in the end of the 1800, beginning of the 1900 into the U.S. came along with the pilgrims, but I've read that in the beginning of the 19th century, like 1920s, let's say, doctors and experts were telling mothers to make sure to tie their babies at night when they were putting them to bed to make sure that the child would not be able to touch him or herself. Tie them up. Tie up their legs, their arms, so that they can't do that. I cannot imagine what kind of fear must be lurking behind that injunction, but it must be a huge one.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're talking about the importance of touch, the science of touch, the anthropology of touch, touch phobia, and, you know, touch toxicity as well, toxic
mm-hmm.
touch.
Right.
Everybody's gone through it in some kind of way. We're talking about some of the prohibitions against touch, and we're just starting with don't touch the other people of the opposite sex, don't touch people of the same sex, don't touch yourself. Here's another one, don't touch strangers.
Mm.
Now, this command is based on a cultural fear of the other, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
like a paranoid attitude towards unfamiliar people and those who are outsiders of one group. So you should never really, like, touch a stranger is one of the attitudes.
And then there's one whereby we're told not to touch the sick, not to touch the old people, not to touch the dying people. Whereas some of these may be the people who need it the most, in my view. Of course, this is just my opinion. But someone who is dying may be the person who needs to hold someone's hand more so than anybody else. What about the sick? They need touch. The elderly. I worked as an EMT in Boston many, many years ago, and I will never forget the sight of walking into a nursing home where we would go and pick up someone, and there would be a lot of folks, you know, 70 and up, tied to their chairs, unable to get up by themselves, with no one to talk to and no one to hold them and no one to touch. It was one of the saddest sights I've ever seen.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. Two people. Touch is highly cultural, too. We're going to have to get to that. You know, different for all cultures, different for all parts of the globe. For some people, touch is something that's natural. We're not saying it's right, because up in Germany and in the Netherlands and in India, it's very, very clear when touch is appropriate and when it's not. And sometimes it's not.
Well, for instance, in India or in countries with the caste system, it's not okay for the lower castes to touch the higher ones, but it's okay vice versa.
There's another one. You know, we talk about the elderly and the sick and the dying because part of it is we're segregating them from the rest of the population on one hand. On the other hand, we're afraid we're going to catch the illness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are afraid. Remember when AIDS first hit and people were afraid to touch somebody with AIDS?
Sure.
Because you would get AIDS by touching people. And we actually passed word around like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody's really old, you can't touch them because
right.
You would get something wrong with you. I tell you, you might get wisdom is what you might get. So look at touch as our first language, Roberta.
Right. Well, we certainly as babies learn through touching way before we learn through seeing, way before we see an image, we hear a sound, we smell an odor, way before we learn to use any of the other senses, we know how to be touched and touch. Because if you observe a baby just born, bonding with his or her mother, the baby will be extending its little hand and reaching out to touch mom. It's an instinct. It comes natural. It's the first thing we learn to do, to touch.
Isn't it amazing, a baby's hand?
A baby's hand.
A baby's hand. I mean, there's...
When you put a finger in it, it holds on to the finger.
There are just very, very few things as fascinating in life as the hand of a baby.
Yes, and think of what the baby is learning through that touch.
And the baby, this is like 90% of its incoming sensorium.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's in its touch system. It's got skin that is so sensitive,
yes,
that a single breeze could send a wave of sensation over to the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why you could put babies don't feel cold and they don't feel heat the way we do. They're so sensitive. It's so amazing. So what is it about touching, and why is it that different people touch? And touch is our very first language. Let's take a look at how touch was used. And for this, I want to go into the history of massage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, earliest record medical history dates from 25 centuries ago. References to the medical treatment utilizing touch in Eastern cultures. Shamans use touch as one of the healing practices to heal the mind, body, and spirit. Touch healers who had been honored by their communities were amazing for a long while, then they lost count. The recent research done by the Touch Research Institute has demonstrated that touch triggers a cascade of chemical responses. Now, we talked about the homunculum.
Homunculus, yes.
A homunculus.
Yes.
But let's look at some of the chemical responses that happen,
sure,
just from touch.
Well, for one thing, we know that touching in a positive way helps decrease the production of the stress hormones like the adrenaline and the cortisol, the norepinephrine, etc., and it increases levels of endorphins and serotonin and dopamine, and therefore it could be said that because it has such a powerful and demonstrable, is that the word, Armand, demonstrable effect on the nervous system, it's a great antidepressant in the sense that you can alter chemicals throughout the body by massaging someone or by touching them in a way that's pleasant for them. It also increases immunity activity. For instance, it has been shown that it increases the activity of natural killer cells. I don't like that name, but these cells are very important because they patrol the body to make sure that whatever should not be there is immediately identified and eliminated. Also, it balances out the levels of the T4 and T8. These are the T cells of the immune system that are the most important regulators of the whole immune function. Touch has a positive effect on that as well. In every way we look at it, when touch is applied with the intention of helping the other, it has a positive effect.
And, of course, invasive touch has dramatically the opposite effect.
Exactly.
But yes. Massage therapy has been shown to reduce aversion to touch and to decrease anxiety, depression, and cortisol levels in women. Now, cortisol, you know, we talked about, it makes you crazy. And has women who have been sexually and physically abused have found that massage has significantly reduced the after effects of the abuse.
I'm sure.
And has resulted in recovery.
Well, because, I mean, from a psychological perspective, if a person has been invaded in that way, my sense would be that they would develop an aversion to being touched. So if you can reintroduce in a way whereby they're able to accept touch again in a trusting way, that can only be therapeutic and supportive.
And we're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we'll continue with this, get into some of the more interesting parts of it. There's also enough evidence to indicate that a baby, when it is born, can really benefit by massage. that a constant massage of a baby by a parent does a tremendous amount of good for helping that baby develop emotionally, physically, and intellectually. And we will, this is not just off the top of our heads. If you want the information, we will provide you with the references to all of this. We just want to spare you all the long names
right. And
the dates. This is Armand DeMille, Roberta Maria Atti, two Italians making a claim for more touch. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
We will be back with you in a very short while. Play your little music and come right back.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener supported and non-commercial.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
No, I don't mind if your promises keep. You don't have to sweat blood trying to please right up till the end. And no, I don't care if there's nothing to say. You won't pretend, cause that isn't the way. I won't be scared, cause I know that you're there. Because you just like being afraid.
Continue on for a while. That's Dolphin Boy.
Mm-hmm.
I do say Dolphin Boy. Don't stop. Armando Mill here, Roberta Maria Atti, with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, bringing you information, things to learn about, touch.
I am touched.
You know, but think about dance. You know, people don't touch when they dance anymore. You know, I mean, touch is kind of almost out of it after the lambda.
Wow, you're right.
You know, there's no more.
There's no more dance. Yeah, that's true.
Remember, imagine if you were doing this very dance, but you were using your hands to touch the person, like you touch their face, you touch their arms.
Right.
Right? It doesn't have to be erotic touch.
Right.
But it's gone out the window.
Sure.
Everybody dances by themselves.
If you think about it, the dancing actually used to be a ritualistic way of touching someone.
Sure.
A ritualistic way of expressing movement, but also through touch when you dance with, you know, when it's couple dancing. Because every way in which you touch the other should be in a certain way.
I wonder where the foxtrot got its name. It's such a funny thing.
From the way that foxes trot,
of course. I knew you would say that, Roberta Maria.
Well, it just seemed.
Do you believe, Roberta, that people use more touch in the southern climates than they do in the northern climates?
Absolutely. Not just I believe that. I have observed it, and there is research that says so. In fact, so much so that the difference is enormous in the sense that, for instance, touching in Italy, let's say, or in the Mediterranean region is considered not only normal, but it's almost a requirement. If you are sitting at a cafe, sipping your espresso, and you're sitting next to your friend, you're supposed to put your hand on his or her arm. You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to make that contact on a physical level. If you don't, it's kind of weird. It's kind of like, well, then this is not a friend. You know, it's like the kind of behavior that you use with a stranger. Whereas in, let's go to Sweden, let's go to even Germany, you're not supposed to touch. If you do, it's considered bad manners. And that's true even in a couple. Even a couple is not supposed to touch in public. A big, huge difference. So, yes, the answer to your question is I think that there is a big difference. And I think that it says a lot about the culture and about its taboos, its fears, its limits, its psychological stance.
Well, it also has to do with, you know, if you think that touch became one of our, if you just tuned in, by the way, it's The Positive Mind. And The Positive Mind is a program on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Right there in the middle of your dial, it is the single station that attracts the most intelligent people in the universe.
Yes.
How's that?
Well,
because if you're listening, you must be part of it. And the most sensitive.
Yes.
Because if you think about it, you know, once people used to use their hands as a way of communicating, and then they developed vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with vocabulary comes intelligence. With intelligence comes thinking. And then thinking, you don't have to touch as much to communicate something. And so, therefore, it seems that the more intellectual a group is, the less touch there's going to be.
Or maybe the more mind-oriented, the more a group of people tends to live in the mind, the less maybe the need to touch. Whereas, you know, in Italy, I think it's well known that people have a tendency to live in their hearts. That means in their emotions a lot, in their expressive self. And so I think touch, it's such an important aspect of human communication, human-to-human expression of feelings and everything else, that it can't be avoided. It wouldn't feel right.
Well, then here's another corollary of what you're saying. It may not be that intellect is the replacement for the lower intellect touch, it may be that intellect is the avoidance of intimacy. And therefore, touch is related to intimacy. Intellect is related to distance, you know, mm-hmm. a different kind of intimacy. And so part of what you get is people afraid to get that close.
Yes, and I think that it's...
Maybe.
Well, I think you have a good point there, that very often people will take refuge, including myself. I do it myself. Sometimes I take refuge in my mind and I start going around in circles when my body is experiencing an emotion that I find difficult to contain or express. And I wonder if I allowed myself to express myself more through touching, what would that look like? What would that feel like as opposed to running into thinking and speaking? So I agree with you, Armand. I agree.
So different cultures, and you've traveled the world. I'm sorry to interrupt. You've traveled the world. And so you have I do want to say that you had touch was a problem for you when you were a child, right? When you were an adolescent.
When I was growing up in Italy, it was a problem for a growing adolescent girl because I couldn't take a bus ride without being inappropriately invaded in this way by some older men.
What was that like?
It was very difficult because I didn't quite know what to do. It was a cultural thing, so there was no blame and no shame, and it was just something that girls had to live with. I, myself, and my friends, we would talk about it, and we would all share this distress and fear. I mean, I used to be afraid of going in a bus because I knew something could happen, and it was very uncomfortable. I remember sometimes getting off three stops before mine because of this, and I would be crying and upset and just not knowing what to do, because there was no... I couldn't have asked for help back then. Now it's different, thank God.
And now in fact, there's just a law passed, a subway law, a law passed in the subways. They're arresting, they're entrapping and arresting men who are just rubbing up against women, you know, as they would have done, you know, in an erotic way.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's a lot of enforcement of that. But, you know, if I think about it, then you travel the world and you went everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find the lack of touch comforting since you came from this background?
Well, there were some countries, which I'm not going to name, where I, as a woman, could not walk around, literally, because... just by walking around alone, what it communicated was that I was available, I guess, in a sexual way, and so I would be almost attacked by a mob of men who would be trying to put their hands wherever they could. And some countries would be like that, and some others would be where no one would touch me ever. I don't know which is worse, Armand, because the lack of it, the complete absence of it, feels just as strange and in a way inhumane as the excess.
It happens with couples. You know, it happens with couples where they don't touch anymore.
Mm.
They don't.
But I have to say, this country is the place where I have found the most, what should I call it, the most problematic attitude towards touch, meaning that people are afraid to touch one another more so than anywhere else in the world that I have observed.
In one of the studies that we ran across, people of Germanic and Anglo-Saxon origin were placed in the low end of the touch continuum, and Scandinavians were in the middle position. People of the Latin, Mediterranean, and Third World ancestry were placed at the high end of touch. Now, this is further substantiated in other studies where they observed people in casual conversation, and they counted the number of times that people touched during a one-hour period. Get ready for the results. touching occurred in a Puerto Rican, in Puerto Rico, in 1 hour, 180 times.
This was in a couple situation?
People touched each other. No.
Friends.
This is just observing casual conversation.
Uh-huh.
180 times in Puerto Rico.
That's a lot.
110 times in Paris. In London, zero. In an hour. In the United States, two. So we are really at the very, very low end.
Yeah.
America is generally at the low end, is a low-touch culture. Within the American culture, there are differences regarding touch between different regions, different parts. Californians touch each other more casually than New Englanders do.
So it really seems to go hand in hand with the weather, Armand. It seems that the colder the weather, the less people touch. Isn't that odd? You would think that
well,
the colder
the
it
opposite.
Is, right? But it seems to be that the warmer the weather, the more people are encouraged to touch. Maybe it's because the warmer the weather, the less clothing we wear, and so maybe more exposure of the skin encourages more touch. I don't know. I could speculate on all kinds of things, including patriarchal, matriarchal tendencies, including, religious beliefs, including philosophical beliefs. We could speculate on a number of things.
But you know, science does give us some help here. Let's talk about the oxytocin for a minute.
Sure. Oxytocin is a hormone, and it's known as the bonding hormone. It's a hormone that we secrete whenever we are in a bonding situation. It starts between mother and child. It starts actually in the womb when the woman is communicating, I guess, unconsciously and subconsciously through oxytocin with her unborn baby. And then it continues throughout life, and including in a couple relationship, there's oxytocin being secreted whenever there is bonding behavior. So bonding and oxytocin go hand in hand. And, of course, it's beneficial. In fact, what has been found in relation to children, for instance, is that, as I was saying before, up until the beginning of the last century, it was believed that it was not a good idea to touch children.
Of New York City's emergency alert system. This is only a test. In the event of a real emergency, this system would provide you with important information. This test of New York City's emergency alert system is now complete.
Believed that it was not a good idea.
Emergency.
I'm being...
You were being told that there was an emergency release. So let's go back and do that again, what you were
okay.
just saying.
Where was I? Where did I get cut
well,
off?
Well, let's go to this one, Roberta.
American
babies and children are the least touched on Earth.
I was just explaining that in the beginning of the last century, there was a belief that if you hold or touch a child affectionately, you spoil the child. So mothers and caretakers were encouraged not to touch children. But then what was found was that in the orphanages and hospitals where babies were kept when they didn't have, I guess, a family, there would be such a high death rate that in the beginning of the last century, in the 1920s, this was New York Bellevue was the hospital that started the trend of holding babies.
Touch the babies, right.
They changed the law, and they encouraged nurses and people to hold children. Well, what happened was that the death rate decreased by 30%, and And so, no, I'm sorry, it decreased by almost 100%.
Right.
I'm sorry. So what that showed was that really what was lacking for the children was touch. It is so important.
You know, I think in a way, Roberta, that you come out of the womb and there you are now. You are now...
And in the womb, you're surrounded by your
touch,
mother.
Right. Now suddenly you come out. And here you are in a crib. And here's the choice. There's life or there's go back to where you came from.
Yeah.
And I think infants have the will.
Mm-hmm.
They have the ability to stop themselves from living.
Oh, I do too.
And so I think what happens is without touch, there is no connection. And SIDS, which is now going to be very popular because they're saying that smoking, ambient smoking, is causing sudden infant death syndrome. So people are learning about it all over the place. But on the other level, not an untouched child may decide to go back where it came from.
Sure, because
just
it
may say, you know, this
because,
doesn't make sense.
Because it's other senses with which the child will eventually learn to explore the world or will learn about the world are not developed yet. Child can't really see much. A newborn can't really understand what sounds mean, is not able to eat solid food, so there's nothing to taste really except milk. And so the only sensory experience that is going to keep the child connected to the world is touch. If that's lacking, there's nothing to attach to, there's nothing to connect with. Not only that, Armand, but it seems that the nervous system, the branches, the neurological extensions of the brain and nervous system can only develop through touch. Touch is what waters the seed of life in the nervous system.
99% of everything that newborns and infants know about the universe, they learn through their senses, through their physical sensations. That was a physician named Bart Levin who wrote about that. So this is Armand DeMille with you. We have so much more to cover. We have about 3 minutes. We need to talk about punishment. About, unfortunately, 93% of American parents use physical punishment. Therefore, there's a higher incident of child beatings and murders by parents in the United States than anywhere in the world.
Oh,
we have the lowest amount of touch and the highest amount of physical beatings.
Well, you know, when you look at what has been the ideal in the U.S., it's this individualistic, rugged individual who can survive anything. And so in order to create that kind of person, perhaps this is what was believed was the way to do it. Don't give it any affection. Punish the kid if he or she misbehaves. And you'll create a strong person. When research shows the opposite, it shows that in fact that tends to be the weaker person. The strongest person is the person who's been held and loved and kissed and hugged and touched and played with and looked at and entertained and
so you're all for
cared
it.
For.
You're all for it.
I'm all for it. Yes.
I hear. This is Armand DeMille, Roberta Mariotti in the Midwest of the United States. They're strongly rooted in German and Scandinavian cultures. They're relatively restrained in their touching behaviors in the Midwest. In contrast, Americans of Latin heritage, you know, mostly in the southern regions of the country, touch easily and often. Americans of Mediterranean heritage touch and kiss freely. Americans of Indian heritage are more likely to be sensitive to class distinction with regard to touch. There's a whole thing about India and Indian touch. That's a huge amount of information.
Well, I remember when I was there, I used to touch people, no matter what the caste was, and I used to be looked at very sternly because that was supposedly bad manners to touch someone that was considered of the lower caste.
In India, there is a 20-page booklet. Men should never touch women in public, even to help a woman out of a car, unless the lady is severely elderly or infirm. Men socialize with men and women with women. Married couples in Asia do not hug, hold hands, or kiss in public. Even embracing at airports and train stations is considered out of the question. Generally, it is improper for women to speak with strangers on the street and especially to strike up a casual conversation, and they beg tourists who come through to observe these rules. Mm-hmm. They say, please, don't violate our rules. This is our culture.
I remember that.
This is the way it is. We don't have enough time to do more with you because we have much more
not
to cover.
Today,
I'm
going to
pick up some tomorrow and we'll do some more next week.
We are definitely going to do some of this. This is really, really interesting, like the nonverbal communication, the ways in which we communicate nonverbally.
And the sexualization of touch, mm-hmm. What's happened as a result of this conflict between touch and sexuality.
Mm.
Only we could do it.
Armand, can I just, before we end...
Roberta, before we go, I wanted to ask you about the Open Center. Aren't you going to be down at the Open Center?
I was just going to say that. It's about to start. So you folks who are interested, I'm giving a course 4 weeks. It's an overview of health in all its aspects. So if you want to, if you're interested, give a call to the Open Center, New York Open Center on Spring Street.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Special thanks to Michael G. for all the help in keeping us going today. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1.